Hey folks, it's Jovan Hutton Pulitzer. Have you ever thought about how much time you use social media? Well, if you've been following me, you have found that I recently made an announcement that I'm taking a vacation from social media. Well, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean I'm taking a vacation from you. I am taking a vacation from some of the things that social media wreaks havoc on in one's life. And that's what I want to talk to you about and give you some regular updates right here on my podcast. And we're going to get to it. And it's going to be very eye-opening right after this.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Stretch your mind. It's that time again to yank your brain away from stinking thinking and wash it in new ideas and thoughts. It's time for your checkup from the neck up and maybe a massive mental enema. This yank is going to give your brain a crank, has been called a genius, since his patents are part of every mobile device made. Get ready for him to reach into your ears and massage that brain of yours. Your host, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer.
You know, I had to get thinking about social media use because I had a really disappointing episode on my own Telegram account. Now, if you follow me online, you know that I try to stay in communication with you on all social media platforms. And so that's Twitter and Facebook pages and groups, MeWe, Gab, Parler, and who am I missing? Instagram. And those are the main social medias that I use. And so recently, as we're going through all this controversial stuff in the United States about what really happened in the 2020 election, I started posting relevant information. And I noticed a trend in my social media, some really odd trends going on where people will go, "Ooh, you're a Jew?" Now, that can be taken anti-Semitic, and I did, in fact, take it in an anti-Semitic way. But you would think that most people would know and understand that about me. So when it started happening, I kind of put it off to the side because it was interesting, because I've learned to come to expect that from the liberal side of the world. Simply because on the liberal side of the world, we have a lot of Jewish people that have walked away from their faith and actually, for whatever reason, hate Israel or anything Jewish and basically want to further the Palestinian cause, which I have a problem with because, as you know, Hamas still offers a bounty that if you're willing to martyr yourself, to kill yourself, and you take Americans and Jews with you, your family gets the equivalent of about 20 times the annual income of living in Palestine, and they pay you for the rest of your life. So they've made a business out of killing people, and ironically, the United States government gives them money, which ends up funding that program, which is really odd. So I have a total intolerance for anti-Semitic rhetoric, because they look at the wrong side in many ways and don't understand what really goes on. But the other side of it is, even on the conservative side of the equation, which predominantly in the United States of America is Christian, I'm actually surprised at how many people still have the opinion it's my way or the highway and don't accept someone's faith for what someone's faith is. Literally, for this country to work, and the reason it has worked is because we've all had to be tolerant of each other and understand that everybody has their own inclinations and predominantly free will. But I found some people on the right basically think it's their charter to actually convert everyone they come into if the person doesn't say the right thing. And I've had many discussions about the use of Jesus or the use of God and how they're used interchangeably, or ironically, how they're not used interchangeably. But if you've ever followed me in my teachings, what I attempt to do is to help people come together by understanding how to look at the things that actually divide us and disconnect us, so people understand what it takes to debate. See, if we only have one side of an equation, the debate becomes no debate. It actually becomes a unibrain or a unitheory or a uniform of thought. And that's what's going on in social media right now, isn't it? Isn't it social media shutting everybody down? Because if you don't think the way that's approved by the social media or the socialist media, they cut you down, cut you off, beat you down, beat you up, and attempt to cancel you. Well, what happened is, as I was, and I'm trying to think, you know, my Twitter Reddit's reach is like 92 million people, and on my podcast here, you know, I think I'm getting close to 19 million plays, and then, you know, I've shut down my YouTube a couple of times. Those were in tens of millions of plays over time. It's building back up again. But I think my Twitter was pretty close to 60,000 followers. And if you know me, you know that one of the things I actually have is I have a sense of humor. And I use humor to manage the stress in my life. If you were to meet me as an individual, you actually meet two people, depending upon where you meet me. There is the persona. The persona is like when I'm doing speaking engagements and I'm going around the world and I'm doing speaking engagements, I can be very gregarious, very open, use humor to get an educational message across. And I tend to use humor to diffuse hard situations. In my personal life, although I still have a sense of humor, I'm actually the opposite of what you might think. I don't go out partying. I don't go out drinking. If I can avoid going out to dinner and stuff, I try to avoid it. I'm not the one to come over for the family barbecue, but I can throw a family barbecue, but I'm not one to go over to other people's houses. And I'm so conservative in that way, even in my own family's homes, my very own family homes, when I go to visit family, I don't just walk in the house. I knock on the door and get permission still. That's truly how conservative and laid back I am. Now, granted, that's the first time when you come in a house. Not if you're staying there, you don't do it every time, you know, if you're staying for a few days. But that's just the way I am. It's the way I was raised. And so in my podcast life or in my social media life, I can cut up, I can have fun, because I understand that's how people learn. And I don't ever want it to get tedious, and I don't want it ever to be hard. Because I think that every day and moment of your life, you should be working to improve your life. And that's why the podcast may be coming more and more important to me, because I can just deliver the message and deliver the education, and then you can take it or leave it. So if you've watched me on my Telegram, it's all too easy. I like to give people direct feedback when they comment. I like to thank them for their comments. You know, I'm still one. I try to, if somebody likes something, I try to like all their comments. It becomes increasingly hard as followers just grow and explode, but I try to tend it and take care of it, you know, like you're tending your crop or your garden or anything else. It needs love and care, and I love communicating with you. But I want to discuss how I came up to, wow, I really need to hit pause. And it didn't come from what you would traditionally think. It didn't come from a troll calling me the typical names that left trolls would call me or attack me. It came from the right. And I want to explain it so you don't think I've abandoned you, but it helped me rethink a few things and decide how best do I utilize my talents and information for each of you. And that's what I'm going to cover in more detail right after this.
Do you know why Joe Vaughn loves doing talk radio? Because he has a face made for radio. It's true. Look at his website. He's a nerd hiding out in a biker's body. Speaking of body, how about a quick pee-pee break? Joe Vaughn will be right back.
You can find Joe Vaughn on Twitter at Joe Vaughn H. Pulitzer.
His website and blog are the same. Just go to jovanhuttonpulitzer.org.
He is on Facebook too. Just go to Facebook.com/JovanHuttonPulitzer. You can find Joe Vaughn on YouTube, Gab, MeWe, Parler, Telegram, and more. Just search hashtag JovanHuttonPulitzer.
Talk about a unique name. Joe Vaughn is very unique. Did you know the name Joe Vaughn harks back to the time of Christ? It is of Hebrew and Latin origin, and the meaning of Joe Vaughn is God is gracious, Father. Joe Vaughn in Latin origins means Jove-like or majestic. In Roman times it was the name for Jupiter. In mythology Jupiter was the supreme deity of Roman mythology, corresponding to the Greek deity Zeus. Now you know why Joe Vaughn is such an oddball.
Imagine on one side your mother's grandfather long ago was Richard III, Duke of Gloucester, and a knight of the most noble order of the Garter. Then on his father's side Joe Vaughn is related to American founding father, the principal author of the Declaration of Independence, and third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson. Talk about controversial family history. No wonder Joe Vaughn is such a firebrand. Let's get back to the oddball.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Okay, it's like Albert Einstein said, anyone who's never made a mistake has never tried anything new. And we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. Let's get back to the show.
So it seems that Entrepreneurs Break magazine, that's, you can find it at entrepreneursbreak.com. They just broke a story by a fellow by the name of James Vents, and the headline is Voter Integrity is the New Voting System Upgrade. Now, what's interesting is they wrote about me in the article. Evidently, this fellow's out of New York, New York. Here's what it says. It says, the whole world is watching as the United States of America undertakes the most comprehensive election audits in the history of the country. Before the 2020 general election, it seems very few American citizens paid attention to the significant issues surrounding American voting machines and systems yet. When, for the first time in history, the counting of the ballots on the evening of the presidential election stopped, citizens took notice and are now starting to look very closely. From November 2020 through March 21, most social media platforms blocked any user postings daring to talk about election fraud or voter fraud. The social media move to censor free speech, ironically, that's what we're talking about, across supposedly free platforms has most Americans enraged, and this rage has now turned into a brand new social movement of its own, election integrity. It goes on to give an interesting thing I'd never heard before. I've talked about it, but I never had all the details. It says from 1970 through 1989, then again in 1990 through 92, a radical book on voter and election fraud came out titled Vote Scam, The Stealing of America by James M. and Kenneth P. Collier. It seems like they're brothers. Now, when you read the history of this book, ironically, the media participated in not letting the results out, which I find very funny. And number two, the media at that time, which was radio, television, and print, blocked the book. It goes on to say in this article, in their book, the brothers pointed out numerous voting machine problems, most identical to the ones being talked about and litigated currently as a result of the 2020 election. Now, that's interesting. It's talking about how we're talking about the 2020 election, but all these things happened in 1970 through 1989 multiple times, and then again 90 and 92. It goes on to say, why is so much time passed? Back then when the media fraud was, or excuse me, back then when the election fraud was documented, the Colliers were both stunned and blackballed and shunned by the media of the day. Ironically, in an eerily similar fashion as social media and news medias today. None of the media would allow the brothers on media airways or print to show their audited results. Even with documented sources, testimonials, affidavits, and physical audits, the entire fiasco of the election fraud was called, ready for this, a myth or outright fabrication. Now, here's a quote from the book. The book's called Vote Scam, The Stealing of America. It's out there. You can find it. It's a rare banned book, but you can find a PDF version. I found mine absolutely free just by typing in votescam.pdf. Anyway, here's a quote from the book. Vote Scams asserts the unthinkable. It is a strange and frightening true detective story. It contains fact, film, documents, and visions seldom seen by the public. It is a troubling look at the corruption of the American vote that most Americans cannot bear to believe is even partly true. Folks, we're talking about a 1992 intro to this book here, okay? And we're in 2021. Anyway, goes on to say, the authors assert and back it up with daring reporting that your vote and mine may now be as meaningless bit of energy directed by pre-programmed computers, which can be fixed to select pre-certain ordained candidates and leave no footprints or paper trail. In short, computers are covertly stealing your vote. That was written by Bernard L. Collier, New York City, 1992. Now think about that, 1992. This is where the article went on to mention me. In fact, it showed the wonderful people in New Hampshire carrying those signs asking for my kinematic artifacts. But here's what they wrote. Debacle for decades will now be upgraded. The American citizens have taken to the streets to demand total election integrity, and they are heralding one technology pioneer as the man for the job, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer. They took a quote, it looks like from Professor Clements. He wrote, "I am joined by a modern-day Benjamin Franklin. Jovan Hutton Pulitzer is a world-renowned entrepreneur, inventor, and most importantly, a patriot. Jovan holds hundreds of patents on technology used by the billions of people around the world. He is also a chief authority on kinematic artifact detection. He can detect a myriad of different forms of fraud on any piece of paper. This includes election ballots. Meet the most feared expert in the world that every corrupt politician is trying to stop. Our country futures hangs in the ballot." And that was the opening from Professor K. David K. Clements' recent podcast. And then it goes on, shows a picture of me. "Most American voters became acquainted with the reclusive technology pioneer when he was asked to speak at a Senate subcommittee hearing for election integrity in Georgia. A recent article from the Vision Times stated, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer, an inventor, board member of the Gold Institute for International Strategists, says any type of machine-readable code is the basis of his portfolio of over 200 patents listed on his Stanford Vitae. Pulitzer says almost every manufacturer in the world licenses patents except for Huawei out of China. They don't license it. They just use it." And yes, I did say that. "His technology is on 12 billion devices globally. Pulitzer made it clear his concerns with the election were nonpartisan. We want to know if these ballots are authentic or counterfeit. We want to make sure the vote is verified. This is not about President Donald J. Trump or President-elect Joe Biden. This is about, we are still a country. Are we still a country where your vote matters? One person, one vote." Anyway, you can look that up at Entrepreneur's Break. "Voter integrity is the new voting system upgrade." Now, it's interesting. It's that topic that brings all of us together, right? We're interested in our country. And I talked regularly on social media, attempting to communicate with you, putting a lot of time and effort into it, because I believe that if you, as an American voter, understand the issues, then when you understand the issues and you understand the argument, then you begin to understand the debate and how to debate. And of course, many on the left are hit and run, trolls boom and go. But many on the right don't sometimes engage. And if they do engage, sometimes it can result into this shouting match. But if you understand the facts behind it and you understand what's going on, then you can literally have an incredible discussion with people. So here I am on my Telegram, right? And I'm discussing, and I'm always trying to push people's minds to think. See, here we are in modern society, and if you wanted to go study incredible information at Harvard or Yale or Oxford or any of the top universities, you could. And ironically, you can actually find courses from almost every university in the world that you can now take through your computer, and they're absolutely free. It's called MOOCing, M-O-O-C, MOOCing. And it's free. You can do it. You can invest in your mind. And even if you didn't have a family that didn't believe in college, or you were supposed to be an athlete and you didn't get your scholarship and you didn't do it, you can learn anything. And I think it's ironic, with all that information at our fingertips, that many of us still only read about 40 to 120 characters, namely twit-twats, right? Twits. About something to think we have the story. Now, I proved this when I posted a picture of a young lady holding up her female pit bull. Now, without going into the photo, because you'd have to see it, the photo actually merges their body together quite innocently. And if you looked at it really quick, you would actually think the woman was sitting there without her shorts on. But you're actually looking at the dog's stomach because she's holding up the dog. Now, I did it because it was probably the best photo analogy that I could post to make people, what was that? Stop and take a look, and then be forced to analyze, what am I looking at? See, we've lost the analyzation ability to understand what am I looking at? And so if your brain gets addicted to social media and you just do a quick hit and out, only look at the most superficial level, then you could actually get the wrong impression, or your mind will give you the wrong information because you're moving so fast, you tend to fill in the blanks. Now, this photo, I posted it by going, wow, even dogs can have a bad selfie day. Now, the reason I did that is because if I told you, hey, look at this photo, and if you look at first glance, it looks like a woman holding her dog, but the woman's not wearing pants. Therefore, look again, and you'll see it's really the dog standing in front of the woman. If I would have done that, it would totally have defeated the purpose of being able to have the dialogue regarding don't make fast snap judgments, especially on social media. So I put it out there, knew we'd get a lot of information and stuff on it, but a full like 16 or 18 hours after the post, my Telegram became a shitstorm. And it was people wildly upset over this photo and going, oh my God, you know, you're doing the audit, you're this, you're that, you're supposed to save the country, this will ruin your reputation, blah, blah, blah. And I explained, there's a purpose for everything I post. And here was the purpose, right? Now, probably, you know, everybody breaks up into thirds. Thirds don't say anything. They sit back and lurk. Third got upset. And the third goes, oh, that's funny. It would look totally different than what I thought it was because they looked, stopped and looked. Now, what I found interesting was that I got feedback from conservatives basically saying that was unacceptable, that it was nudity, that it was porn, when it absolutely was not nudity or porn by any stretch of the imagination. And so I said, you got to understand that photos for a reason to make you think. And when you really look at it and use your brain, you understand your brain tells you something different than what you think it is. So slow down and look. Well, it still didn't get the point across. People still wanted to argue about it. Still wanted, well, that's unbecoming and that's insinuating. One lady insinuating I was endorsing bestiality. A woman holding a dog does not imply bestiality at all. It's really weird. But it degraded and it became about, no, I'm right because you shouldn't have posted it. No, I'm right because you shouldn't have posted it. No, I'm right. This reflects on you. You shouldn't have posted it. And the entire moral of the story was, slow down, look, absorb, break down, understand before you comment. Now, see, that would be the optimal advice for somebody using social media. Don't knee-jerk respond. I've done it before and been wrong. But we need to slow down in order to be able to engage in a meaningful dialogue. Because if we move too fast, two things happen. We can make a snap wrong judgment, which can create a controversy like this did. And then when it creates a controversy, you can be so upset in your mind based on your mind's interpretation of it, your misinformation implanted in your own head about it, that you then cannot engage in a dialogue and back it up and understand what it really is. And that is what I see is the most horrible issue of social media. Nobody wants to admit they're wrong. And even when things are taken wrong and interpreted wrong, it's the interpretation that becomes the discussion versus what the facts are. And remember, only the author of any post is qualified to answer what the facts are, why they posted it, and what it meant. Everything else you put into your head is your own personal opinion. So I literally spent maybe an hour and a half of my morning, it was on a weekend, trying to convince two people, maybe three, out of 60,000 that, wait a minute, slow down, this is not what it is. And when it degraded into, well, this is bestiality, it kind of went too far for me. And I basically thought to myself, have I made myself too accessible? You know, this is why most people that have very public jobs stay out of the public eye and try to hide, because it's all too easy for people to read things wrong and get misimpressions. And then when that person gets a misimpression, that misimpression can become like a cancer, because they'll spread it all over the place and affect other people. So what I was watching in my social media is one person's flare-up, although there was many battling to correct it, the more the flare-up happened, it just kept on infecting people, because they couldn't go back to the original image. They only went back to the words that were said about the image and said, oh my God, he was talking about this, when it never was. And that, my friends, is the curse of social media. So when I come back, let's talk about this social media stuff. Let's talk about its proper use and etiquette, but let's talk about what are we really doing when we give time to that? And how can we use it in a way to change our lives for the better? Be right back right after this.
Your host for this program is Jovan Hutton Pulitzer, the internet pioneer who created Scan to Connect and Scan Commerce. You know, while you're able to scan codes with your mobile device and get information. So, hang tight, we'll be right back.
You know, Jovan gets fingered by almost a billion people a day. Yep, that's every time they use certain features on their mobile device and click it with their finger to make it work. And they don't even know his weird brain came up with that. Now back to the show.
So I'm talking about social media. I'm talking about why people gather together on social media, because social media could, one, either be a crisis, or it could be incredible camaraderie, right? I like to think that people come to my social media, you know, not my podcast, because we can't interact with each other, but my social media, because we can engage and find common ground to build meaningful friendships and relationships with each other, right? It doesn't matter to me that you're on the end of a computer. I have many great, wonderful acquaintances and friends I've made on the computer and have never met them in real life. And that's one of the brilliant things about living in this technology age. How cool is it that we can all connect on our phones and dialogue with each other instantaneously? That's a powerful thing. And so as I was talking about this ruckus that came up, that I didn't have the ability to quell. I failed, right? I failed getting it to calm down in my own home on the internet. See, it was Telegram, and those 60,000 people that follow me there gather for my information. So I kind of call that my home on the web, right? So or in cyberspace, whatever you want to call it, right? So that's one of my homes where 60,000 of us gather. But in my own home, an argument started, and I couldn't quell it. And so I watched this argument devolve in my own home. Now, I like to think of my home as a mansion because it's really big and a lot of corridors and a lot of halls and a lot of things to do. But this one went out of control. And even by attempting to share what was true about it, the truth got lost in the mix and people only want to talk about their feelings and what it said to them versus what it actually was. Now, I personally think it's better to speak from facts than there are feelings, because I think when you have facts and you feel something tremendous or great, it's a conviction. That's completely different. That's like being a leader and motivated and sharing. But when you have feelings that are just your own personal feeling, not based on a fact, just how you feel, that's a completely different thing. And I believe that's quite a bit of a reason why Antifa and BLM and these others march and do things, because they just feel it's the right thing. And we absolutely know none of them have the facts. Therefore, I'm like amazed when I find this in conservative circles, because the dialogue becomes, well, you should take that down. Well, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that type of thing. You know, you're this leader and you're this and that, and you shouldn't do it. And what I feel on my side is I'm going, it's my home. It's my place. I get to do what I want. And it was a teaching moment that was actually pretty hilarious at the same time. It made you look, right? Made you look. But at some time, because of how people felt, they then felt it was their right to tell me it had to go. And that is what didn't sit well with me. And when you look at the magnification of it, how it can become infected, because one person like that infects others, and then it kind of becomes the crowd pylon, because a lot of people, not in conservative circles, but a lot of people like to do the pylon, right? And so the pylon begins. And so it really made me look at it going, wow, is this even worth my time to try to fix, to try to explain? Now, there's part of me that feels very, obligated to you, that I communicate. It's my hallmark, that I reach out and I talk to as many of you as I can, that I try to personally comment. Very few people do that. I try to do that because it's important to me. But in this scenario, it didn't work, no matter how much I did. So then it made me think, why do I do this? What am I really doing here? And am I really spending my time learning something? See, I think time is well spent if you learn. The way I was trained in business and media and other stuff is that if you're going to broadcast, you're going to share information, share things where people can learn. See, then I'm giving you something back for the time you're investing in me. That's my whole goal with social media or anything I do, is can I give you knowledge back in exchange for the time you are giving to me, right? So I'm different. I don't give a rat's ass if I post a picture about my lunch, if you like it or love it, right? That's not educational. But if I was to give you a wonderful, incredibly rare ancient recipe, right, I want to give it to you so you can maybe duplicate it in your life and do something with it. And so my whole personal opinion of social media is to be able to give, to be able to serve, to be able to share, and it must be worth your time or your bandwidth, or I'm not doing my job. Because it's not just to listen to my voice or hear me cut up or whatever, it's to actually try to educate you. So I want to put this into an example for you of why I take this so seriously and why I do such deep soul searching on it. That I think people don't realize this. So let me give you a few comparisons, number one. And so let's just agree, you know, people can have a lot of, you know, college education, associate degree, bachelor's degree, whatever, but let's agree, you know, most people don't go for PhDs, but say a master's degree was a good goal. Now, when you use a standard rule of thumb to think about your education, especially if it was a master's degree, a good rule of thumb is you're going to spend at least 2 hours per week per the credit hour that you get for the course. Understand that? So if you got X credit hours for the course, you're going to spend 2 hours at least during that week working for those credit hours. Okay. And so if you're going to go to school full time to get a degree, you'll take as many as 15 credits per semester. Those who go part time can take as many as, let's say, as few as 6 credits per semester. Now, this means that in your life, your personal life, sorry, that you have to dedicate anywhere from 12 to 30 hours per week to get your degree. Okay, that's the investment. That would be if you had to do an analysis of how much time per week should I expect to spend earning a master's degree while I have a full-time life, which is what you're doing with me, right? I'm trying to educate and share, but all of you have a full-time life. And so the rule of thumb is you're going to put 2 hours in for every credit degree you get. So most people working in that capacity, whether it's part-time or full-time degree, are going to invest 12 hours to 30 hours a week. 12 hours to 30 hours a week, okay, getting their degree. Okay? So now we're going to do some basic, simple math. There are 60 minutes in an hour. Okay? If you wanted to basically get your degree, you would spend approximately 2 hours a day working on your professional degree or education. I think we can agree on that. Okay? Now, many people believe they don't have the time to get an advanced degree, other than, you know, it can be useless. But if you find what you're engaged in, it can make your life very much richer. Now, let's look at some interesting facts about social media. Now, in 2020, they estimate there are some 3.8 billion, with a B, 3.8 billion people that use social media. That is roughly half of the entire world's population. Half of the world uses social media. Okay? And remember, we just talked about degrees. Well, you ready for this? In the United States of America, let's just do it by continents to make it easier, right? The average daily breakdown of social media use and attention by person in North America is 2 hours and 6 minutes a day. Now think about what I said about getting a master's degree or getting an advanced degree of any kind. You're going to be putting in at least 2 hours a day to get that degree. But yet, on whole, in North America, the average social media user spends 2 hours and 6 minutes a day on social media. And I sure as hell hope it's not looking at, you know, pooches you can put in purses and who wore what and, you know, who had who and who shakes their ass and who can do the stupid dance or what you had for lunch. But think about that. The average American invests in social media every day the exact amount of time it takes to get an advanced degree. In South America, it's 3 hours and 24 minutes. In Africa, it's 3 hours and 10 minutes. In Europe, it's 1 hour and 15 minutes. And in Asia or Oceania, it's 2 hours and 16 minutes. Think about that. Think about that. That is freaking nuts. Absolutely nuts. Why? Because if an average 10-year-old started using social media, and we said their lifespan was a short one considering the world at 72 years, then they're going to spend 3,462,390 minutes on social media, or said better, they are going to invest 6 years and 8 months of their life shoving what is typically shit in their head. Isn't that just weird? That is absolutely nuts. And most people now consume their media the same way. You only spend in your entire life about 3 years, 7 months overall eating and drinking. You spend about 2 years, 2 months in your entire life maybe shopping. 1 year, 8 months doing housework. But you spend at minimum 6 years and 8 months of your entire life consuming social media. And if you're consuming everything on your phone, all of your TV, that will add, ready for this, another 8 years and 4 months. You might be consuming 15 years of your lifespan connected to that device. That is nuts. And so it made me sit back and think about, holy smokes, am I really being productive? Now, I think everything I try to do from an educational standpoint is productive. But I know it is not productive for me to try to correct one person's or two people or three people's thoughts of what I intended. And so it was a really sobering reflection for me. Oh, by the way, you know that 2 hours a day you spend, if you're 16 to 19 or 16 to 29, if you're 16 to 29, you spend over 3 hours a day on social media. And so I submit to you that maybe, when it comes to social media usage, you should consider it as a tool to learn, and it's much easier to learn by taking in the message and studying, by doing your homework, by looking at things, than it is bickering about things. Because if I was a professor and that was in my class, and it was that amount of bickering, I would kick your ass out of the room. It's just a fact. Why would I do that? Because if three were upset and I've got 60,000 in the room, right? The other 59,997 are really what's important. And so that's what made me stop and step back from social media. It made me, I'm going into a mode to truly try to reevaluate it. To evaluate how much time I put into it. See, me doing a podcast is 100% productive time because I can share the message and share the lesson. It's up to you to consume it. Somebody says, well, you got commercials and bumpers. Well, I have to breathe and get a drink of water, right? And I'm just not going to preach at you nonstop. That's not my idea of a podcast, right? Music breaks it up. Music sets the tone. It allows me to get my breath and get a drink. But see, therein's the difference. You listen to my podcast, but yet, oh, it's got commercials in it. Then don't listen to my podcast. See, that's the difference. And so what I'm asking everybody to do is think about your relationship with social media. Are you getting something from it? Now, if you're on social media to troll, you need a life. You just have a horrible life if that's your entertainment. The second part of it is, in social media, you have to realize when you're in somebody else's room, it's just like being in their house, which means they make the rules. You have your own gathering where people gather, then you get to make the rules, right? It's very simple. But when you come into somebody else's house, they get to make the rules. And so just like in a normal human situation, treat it like as if you were at a dinner party. If you didn't like the guest or the topic, you can leave. Doesn't mean everybody has to please you. Doesn't mean the cook has to cook you a special meal. It just means you have free will. And so this entire scenario has allowed me to step back and look, going, am I using social media in the most productive way? And it's such a liberating exercise. I'm asking you to take a look at your social media and where you're investing your time. If you're investing your time in social media and things that don't enlighten you or open your mind to new things or share with you new things, you might want to consider finding better social media, because social media should benefit you, not hurt you. It should benefit you and hold you up, not destroy you. It should inspire and educate you, not piss you off. Think about that. Because why? Because social media is another form of having relationships in this digital world. And in relationships, you must understand who you're having a relationship with and what are the terms of that relationship. So think about it, folks, especially if you've never thought you could get an advanced education. I suggest you look at your social media habits. Wow, imagine if you swapped part of that time just to go take a math course or a history course or even learn to paint. Imagine how much more fulfilled your life will be. So for me, I'm just kind of contemplating, am I really going to push my podcast more and blog versus social media? Haven't made that decision yet. I'm taking time off, but I'll let you know. And I still want you to know I love each and every one of you and appreciate you joining me. Until next time.
That went by fast.
Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer live. And as Jovan says, if you can dream it, you can do it. Speaking of doing it, let's do this again next time. Find Jovan on all social media.
Or search hashtag Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer.
Or by visiting jovanhuttonpulitzer.org.
Until next time.